From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
United States Senator Lisa Murkowski believes an effort by a Washington State conservation group to put Alaskan king salmon on the endangered species list is misguided. The Wild Fish Conservancy filed a petition with NOAA Fisheries in January. Senator Murkowski, in a call with radio station KCAW from Sitka, says the organization has missed the mark.
They are attempting to utilize a very legitimate law, the Endangered Species Act, for what I would consider to be a very wrong-headed purpose, and that is to basically stop our wild fisheries.
Murkowski says Alaska's fisheries are under threat from several sources, including environmental pressure from climate change and warming oceans, and economic pressure from Russia's oversupply of traditional seafood markets. And there's also ongoing litigation by the Wild Fish Conservancy itself, which sued NOAA Fisheries in 2020 to shut down the commercial troll fishery for kings in southeast Alaska. That tactic has yet to succeed, so Murkowski is not surprised that the Wild Fish Conservancy is trying another.
If you're looking to shut down a fisheries, a threat by way of a petition with the ESA is certainly a direction to do that. I think we need to make sure that we are well armed with our own science and data about our fisheries, but that takes monitoring, which is time, and it takes resources, and that's one of the things that I've been doing at the federal level to help address the challenges that our fisheries are facing and our fishing communities.
Murkowski says outside environmental organizations often miss the point. No one has a greater interest in preserving Alaska's wild salmon stocks than Alaskans. Individual fishermen, their families, and the communities they live in all depend on healthy stocks.
It is not in their interest to overfish, to overharvest, to see the species be negatively impacted. And I think we take great pride in how we have approached management. Now, it is not without challenge. We understand that. And there are factors out there that we're seeing at a rate and a pace that we've not seen before that are associated with the environment and climate. But we don't get near the credit for the way in which we manage our fisheries with a view toward true sustainability.
The petition to list king salmon in southeast and south central Alaska as endangered is being reviewed by NOAA Fisheries, which is expected to make a decision shortly on whether or not it has merit. In either case, the question could wind up in court, possibly for years.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced earlier this month it intends to buy millions of pounds of Alaska salmon and pollock products. As KDLG's Christina McDermott reports, the bids come as Alaska seafood processors are struggling to sell their fish, and many fishing crews are contending with extremely low prices for their catch.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture will purchase nearly 2 million cases of canned salmon and 15 million pounds of pollock, according to a press release from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Alaska's congressional delegation praised the salmon bids in a joint press release, saying the department's salmon purchases will account for up to $100 million. The bulk of that money will go towards purchasing pink salmon, with the rest going towards sockeye. In January, dozens of state lawmakers signed a joint letter to the USDA requesting it buy Alaska Seafood to help stabilize the industry, citing a tight timeline with processors needing financial support to prepare for the 2024 season. Other industry groups have also called on the department to boost its support for Alaska Seafood products. Major seafood processors such as Trident and OBI Seafoods have stated that they have struggled to sell their supply, citing decreased domestic demand as well as a tightening international market. Across Alaska, several processors have closed facilities. And the request comes as prices paid to fishermen crashed across several species last year. The purchases should help move products ahead of the upcoming season and this year's base price announcements. The fish purchased through the USDA will go to programs aimed at reducing hunger, including school meals and food banks. In Dillingham, I'm Christina McDermott.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Fisheries surveys are an essential tool for sustainable fisheries management. But in the midst of marine heat waves, surveys of pollock abundance in the Gulf of Alaska made wildly different estimates. As KTOO's Anna Canny reports, a new study shows that these surveys may not fully account for the way fish are responding to climate change.
Right about now, pollock are gathering in the Shelikof Strait near Kodiak Island. And soon, scientists will follow them to do their annual winter survey. Fisheries biologist Lauren Rogers with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said the goal is to get an estimate of how many pollock are out there in the Gulf of Alaska just before they spawn.
And so that timing of when pollock are going to be migrating to the spawning grounds or away from the spawning grounds is then going to be particularly important for that survey.
But the timing of pollock spawning is becoming more unreliable as human-caused climate change warms the ocean. That means scientific surveys that are used for fisheries management could become more unreliable, too. Between 2017 and 2019, four surveys of pollock abundance across the Gulf of Alaska showed mysterious, mismatching results. Summer surveys showed near-record low populations, while the winter survey in the Shelikof Strait showed record highs. To understand the mismatch, Rogers and her collaborators worked backwards, using surveys of larval pollock.
We have the offspring information, and then we can go back to what must the parents have been doing in order to put them in the world when they were put in the world.
Their findings, published in a paper earlier this month, showed that for years when the Shelikof survey differed, spawning had happened much earlier than normal. In 2017 and in 2019, peak spawning happened more than 2 weeks earlier. That was likely shaped in part by the marine heat waves that hit the Gulf around that time. Rogers found that those changes in timing explain much of the mismatch with the Shelikof Strait survey. But, she says, spawning isn't the only thing these surveys need to pay attention to. The warming oceans may be changing fish in all kinds of ways, from altering growth rates to shifting migration patterns and distribution. Recent studies in the Bering Sea, for instance, showed populations of pollock moving further north as sea ice melts. That messed up surveys, too. But Rogers says fisheries managers can try to adjust to these changes when determining their stock assessments and catch limits.
We can understand what potential biases might we have, and then we can start to come up with ways of accounting for those.
It's not just a simple matter of doing the Shelikof survey earlier or moving the Bering Sea surveys north. That's because the effects of climate change will be unpredictable from year to year.
Planning for a continual shift is not going to allow us to respond as proactively as we need to.
So to keep up, fisheries managers need to consider the latest climate science. It's the only way for them to follow the fish in a rapidly changing ocean. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Most people probably don't question what happens to commercial fishing line after it's used. While some of it is recycled, much of it ends up in landfills or on shorelines. But as KDLL's Hunter Morrison reports, it can also be crafted into durable home furnishing.
Founded in 2013 on Kodiak Island, the Alaska Rug Company uses recycled fishing line and rope to craft hand-woven rugs, doormats, baskets, rope decor, and more. Jen Luton of Sterling bought the online shop last summer.
One thing that we are really proud of is that we recycle things, so it helps the impact of the local landfill. The things that people would rather just throw out because they don't need it anymore, we can actually use it and turn it into something that makes money for us and in turn for our community.
To craft these products, the company must first track down used fishing line and rope in the community. This requires making connections with local fishermen while constantly scouting other local sources. The line is then washed and measured before it's cut into smaller sizes.
I right away noticed how special the line was when I started messing around with it, and I started thinking, wow, these ropes have been through like the waters of Alaska, and they've caught fish, and they've like experienced something. And I know it's an inanimate object, but it feels kind of imbued with magic, and I'm really grateful I get to work with something like that and turn it into something beautiful and useful, a usable piece of art that will essentially last for a really long time.
The company, which is co-owned by Luton's partner, Ryan Bernard, also makes custom signs from locally purposed driftwood. In 2019, while still based in Kodiak, Alaska Rug Company represented the state of Alaska at the third annual Made in America Showcase, a product fair held at the White House. Since the company's relocation to the Kenai Peninsula, the owners say they've seen steady growth. The online shop gets the majority of its business from the lower 48, particularly from states like Florida and Texas. Luton says less than 5% of all sales are within the state of Alaska. The couple plans to expand local advertising this spring.
I think that it's a really cool product for the area because even though Kodiak's really tied to the commercial fishing industry, this area is too.
While much of the company's products are purchased by out-of-state customers, the profits stay local. Luton says that bolsters the local economy and allows her to support other local businesses.
And I hope that people that purchase from us understand that they're helping support us to create art, which is really therapeutic for us both. We've both really loved learning this new art and craft, and I know it's something really old that was essentially created by sailors. When I realized one of the knots and mats I had been making was actually a useful piece of equipment on a ship, I was really blown away.
In addition to the Alaska Rug Company, Luton owns and operates AK Tie-Dye, which sells an assortment of tie-dyed products. She says she'll be selling products from both shops in a combined vendor tent at events like Salmon Fest this summer. Although the company does mostly online sales, you can find products from the Alaska Rug Shop for sale at businesses like The Goods and Locals in Soldotna.
I hope that people can look at what we make and say, wow, they made something out of almost nothing, and it's really cool.
The Alaska Rug Shop is actively looking for people interested in donating used commercial fishing line and rope. If you want to donate, be sure to check out Alaska Rug Shop on social media. In Sterling, I'm Hunter Morrison.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.